Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and we're going to continue moving forward, covering content on Mondays and Fridays, because it is just that important. And I say that because it is becoming more and more obvious. As a matter of fact, let me go through the obligatories, and then I'm going to state the obvious. Or what I think, if you actually start getting engaged, you're going to go, wow, GR was absolutely right. So now it is now or never. That debt is fraud. I cannot emphasize enough how that debt is. It has been created over a century, and it is all fraud. When the government spends a taxpayer's dime, and they have to take debt, and that money that they're spending on it, or whatever the objects that they're spending their money on, I should say, if it is not authorized by that Constitution, then the public servant who was authorizing that is committing fraud. We are not responsible for fraudulent debt. The fact that they created a Federal Reserve and the way they're managing our currency and the way they've been siphoning off, you know, out of our pockets, profits for themselves, that too is unconstitutional. Now, there are those who listen to this show and have kind of waited for these types of little nuggets to say, aha, we can go after those people who are part of the Federal Reserve and the deep pockets that that money's been going into. We have a right to go after them for all of that money they've made off us because it was done fraudulently without the true authority delegated by the states to that federal government. For the Federal Reserve to be legitimate, they would have had to amend the Constitution. Now, see, this is why even the bank itself was problematic. Madison did not understand how he could raise money without creating a bank, which is why he created a second charter, because the first bank kind of capitulated and then they just got rid of it under Thomas Jefferson. Well, we got attacked and we were in a financial position where we had to raise money. We had to borrow money to fight Britain in the War of 1812. Now, it took a lot of money, but it didn't take a lot of time to kick their butts again. And as a matter of fact, the real butt shellacking that they got was by Andrew Jackson, as they were already signing the treaty, worked out the treaty and everything else, because the word doesn't travel fast. This is one of the reasons why we had an electoral college. This is the reason why they created the Republican form of government that they created. Had we started today, then I don't know where we would be regarding the Constitution, because things are no longer equal. Technology has gone, it has grown to a point that there's no way a patriotic movement could even be formed. The equality of deadly force back in the days of the framers was amazing. I mean, you know, a ragtag militia could actually raise up enough deadly force just like an army. The only thing is, the Army may have artillery, they may have bigger guns, but it doesn't mean we couldn't capture those. Doesn't mean, it's not like the disparity today with technical gathering of information and being able to target, you know, from a long distance with munitions and computer systems and aircraft. I mean, a patriotic movement today would never come close to fighting the level of deadly force that is amassed in these big formal armies today. So don't think for a minute that we actually have a chance other than just protecting ourselves and keeping, you know, I'll just say the evil hordes from amassing and organizing in a short period of time. But if they perceive you as a threat, let's just look at this pragmatically. If you are truly a threat and that they want you dead, then it's just a matter of just targeting a smart bomb right onto your location. Boom, you're done. It's done. They don't have to put lives in danger or what have you. The only reason that they would use that kind of thug force today is just because you're inconsequential. At that point in time, they don't think that they really need to come after you. Or, you know, they'll use the thug force. But to use that level of sophistication and that type of weaponry, you really have to scare the crap out of them. And so having you contained and then using the thug force or whatever the next, I mean, they have all these different levels of deadly force and the types of munitions that they can use. But this show is not about that. This show is also about appealing to heaven. We have a not only a right, a responsibility, because when Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden and God gave him the commandments and everything else, he also told them to petition him. And from the very beginning, we have been petitioning and appealing to heaven. And as things were moving forward in England, and I told you, John Locke was the one that created this appeal to heaven. That's where that all comes from, is two treatises of government. So learn, pray, and act so that we actually learn. You got to understand what we need to ask for. So learn, pray, and act. Now, it's all about compliance of the Constitution. In other words, if the DOJ, if Trump was actually using the DOJ to actually get rid of the judges, to get rid of Congress, to get rid of everybody who's exercising an insurrection against the Constitution, we would actually, you know, we would be able to whip this government into shape very quickly. The only problem is, because of their illiteracy, they really wouldn't know what to do. And the real question is, do they really want to? Because as I've been trying to get state legislators to actually enforce that law, they look around the room and say, well, that would apply to us equally, and we don't want to hold ourselves accountable like that. I've actually had representatives, or I should say, I think a senator and a few representatives in Wyoming pull me aside and go, hey, we love what you're doing, but you're asking us to hold each other accountable to the Constitution. We don't understand the Constitution like you do, and we're afraid of losing our jobs. And that right there is an indictment. That right there is an indictment, because obviously if you've got the right spirit and you say, you know what, we may not know. And so you know what I told them is, I said, if you create this committee, you could go to the committee on everything you do so you can make sure that what you do is constitutional. And if you go to the committee and say, hey, what do we do about this? And they don't know. Then, you know, it kind of gives you that out, because you did everything you could. You did everything you possibly could to make sure you were in compliance with the Constitution. And I think that right there creates a little point for pause to say, you know what? You did what you were supposed to do. You looked and you tried to find out, and because nobody knew, because somebody with a greater knowledge of the Constitution, there are a few people out there that have greater knowledge. Very, very few. And as a matter of fact, folks, I'm going to tell you, if you listen to this show and if you read the Constitution, you're going through this content with us, you are probably one of the foremost experts on the Constitution, because nobody understands how DOD is completely unconstitutional, or not completely, but the most of it is unconstitutional. We're just spending money into the Army, Air Force, and Space Force that doesn't belong there. It all belongs over in the Navy. It's the same thing with the militia. And the fact, and this is another nugget that I know a regular listener is trying to create this movement, that the draft has been unconstitutional. The federal government, if you understand, the federal government has no ability in the Constitution to directly call you into service. The Constitution says they will call forth the militia, which means your state will determine who out of their militia it will meet the requirements to go. This is a much smarter way of actually fulfilling the call from the federal government, because you've got people trained, you've got people within disciplines, and so forth. Had we honored and maintained the militia and actually implemented it the way the Constitution actually would have had us do that, then we wouldn't even be in this mess. So my point is, getting back to these obligatories, we have to start demanding compliance. We need every public servant to be committed. Remind them that they need to create these constitutional compliance committees so that they can have subject matter experts. Get rid of the lawyers. You know, there's that Eagle song, get rid of the lawyers and do it today. I think it's, I believe it is, it's on Hell Freezes Over, and it's a John Henley song. And, I got to look that up. And I'm going to tell you what it is. Get over it, I think. Yeah, get over it. Because the lawyers are the biggest problem. As a matter of fact, I'll even dive down a real quick rat hole. Our legal system and our medical system has turned its backs on its duty and service to those in their profession. That's what they're supposedly doing, is to serve. Just like lawyers. As a matter of fact, when you have a profession that your job is to milk the people, your job is to actually, take advantage, then you really need to question what you're doing and whether you're square with, the Creator. Because if you are literally taking advantage of people, because that's what your profession does, the medical and the legal industries today, that's all they do, because they're being driven on the medical side by the pharmaceuticals and to basically make you more and more addicted. It's almost like what they were doing to tobacco, alcohol, and other things a long, long time ago before we had all of these chemists and biological engineering and so forth. There have always been nefarious sides to business. It's one thing to give people something that they want. It's another thing to actually get them addicted and actually hold them to their addiction, like what the UK did to China, or I should say what the British Empire did to China. Anyway, when you look at the medical industry, the pharmaceutical, all these things are all in league in not helping us, not curing us, but to actually make money off of us. That's exactly what the legal industry started doing back in the 1800s as well. And as a matter of fact, they're all competing for your dollar. Energy the same way. There is no reason why we do not have electrical grid that everybody just pays a fair share of what the cost of creating that electrical energy is. A subscription. That's right. There's when you look at water now and you look at the utility bills, if you use more, they charge you more. And what if you have a bigger family? What if you have a bigger yard? And if you can't water your grass or you can't water your bushes, you become a fire hazard for everybody else? And then they'll hold you accountable for that because you have more. It shouldn't be that way. It should be flat rates, because they actually increase what they charge per watt, what they charge per gallon, because you're an obsessive excessive user. I'm sorry. So anyway, when we look at constitutional compliance, it is all about that. That's what your campaign needs to be based on. And you need to be the one saying, I would do this. I am willing to actually step into these positions and do my job in supporting the Constitution. That is what we need today, folks. This is the third awakening. You want to be able to create that, the religious awakening. We have to awaken ourselves to this government and the situation we're dealing with. You cannot do one without the other. Because right now, it is the government that is strapping us down and taking full control and advantage of us, just like the medical industry. Our political industry has done the same thing. So we've got a lot of evil in most of the industries that we have. And anybody that says, no, we don't want to hold people accountable, they are a huge part of the problem. And if you're not a part of the solution, because the solution is accountability, then you are a part of the problem. Now, one of the things I wanted to mention, because this is very frustrating, And I'm dealing with people that start working with me, and they go, "Man, I'm getting frustrated." And it takes time to get them off the ledge, to pull them back, to, because we can't afford to lose people, and we especially can't afford to lose them over the wrong things. And so there is an adage that we all have to be mindful of. It is hard and sometimes impossible to teach an old dog new tricks. I can't, and I'm not your savior. I'm only a person that is trying to get, you know, duly engaged in creating a league of leaders. And I've got leaders all around this nation, people that are actually stepping up and doing things. You need to lead. You need to actually take responsibility for the groups and the people you're working with. And the problem that I'm dealing with, because it just came up today, that there are many people that when you tell them that they've got to read, they don't want to learn. You know, when you're dealing with old dogs, they don't want to learn new tricks. They know what they already know what's right and wrong. But if you don't understand interposition, why and how this works, if you don't understand these fundamental things, and it took us 14 hours to go through. And I think we went through it thoroughly, but I'm already being told by some of the people that, you know, even though I've gone through this, it's still not second nature to me. I mean, I don't understand it completely. I'm still learning it, and absolutely everything I've learned, I accept that's the truth. I'm just showing you that there's levels of frustration. It takes time. As a matter of fact, what it would take one person going through those 14 hours of reading and listening, and along with listening to those 14-hour podcasts or recordings that we have on the Academic Source Document page, ASD, the Academic Source Documents. Go to Reclaiming the Republic, Academic Source Documents, and if you scroll down a little bit, you'll find the 5 critical documents that you really need to understand. Underneath that, we have the documents, and then we have these 14 parts, part 1, part 2, all the way down to 14. Each part is where we're reading and discussing what you're reading. And each of these is so critical that you have to get your mind wrapped around this. Now, I'm telling you, because I've had fallen aways from a political, or I should say organizational leaders, that felt that nullification in their interpretation of what this means, because there's nobody, unfortunately, and I can't say nobody. I believe that there are a few other people, but even with the institutions that I am working with, they are not leading their institution on these fundamental principles of getting your counties to start talking and teaching and understanding and working together, getting the states teaching them and understanding and working together. This is how we learn what we need to do and how we effectively, and when it comes to interposition, this is the most efficacious way of doing this. So I've been trying, and we're working to try to create a roundtable of your state legislators. As a matter of fact, by the day's end today, so by tomorrow, on Reclaiming the Republic, on the Constitutional Articles page, we will put both the email that I sent out to 14 this last weekend. I spent my time, I said, I got to get these things done. Believe me, I have a bevy, a plethora of number one priorities. I've got to do this. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. I have to take care of my health. I have to take care of my family. Those are really my key things I've got to do. And I'll tell you what, when it comes down to everything, I'll take care of my family before I take care of my health. I'll take care of, you know, this patriotic stuff before I take care of my health. Because I don't want to say that I let something hit the ground. And I'm okay dying for what I'm doing. I'm okay with that. You can't come in here lighthearted and understand that this is a battle. It's a spiritual. It's an intellectual. This is a battle over the mores, and I should say the soul of America and the world. The world is basically in the balance of all of this, but we have to save America first. We have to do this. And so as I kind of look at, you know, going through all of these frustrations, I created this email where in the email itself, it's very short and it's pointing to two documents. And in the document itself, in the email document that I'm going to put up, it'll be a PDF, I will have the links to the two documents that we wrote. One document is the truth about the 17th Amendment. And the other document is, and let me get to make sure I give you the right title to it, because I should have it right here. The other document would be, I think it's something like, Who is Failing America? Who is it that's failing America? Is it the president? Is it Congress? Is it the Supreme Court? Is it the medical industry? Is it some professional industry? Are they the ones? No, these are the ones that are attacking America. They're doing what everybody else has done, and they're doing the status quo. The presidents are continually trying to legislate. The SCOTUS and the courts are everybody is trying to legislate and control us. The medical industry, the political industry, the legal industry, everybody is trying to control us. And the person pulling all the strings is Satan behind all of this. And most people are completely oblivious that they're involved or that they're even in league with the Dark One. It's really sad. Because we have lost, because a long time ago we started losing our mores as a society. So, and as a matter of fact, that was one, if you've ever read Alexis de Tocqueville's book, Democracy in America, the word mores was used time and time again because that was what separated us from the rest of the world. It wasn't necessarily one particular faith. It was that we all had faith and that we all were doing our best to try to be more righteous as a people. And we started really going when religion in America started serving mammon, which was in the Second Awakening, folks. If you read my first book or you ever heard me talk, the Second Awakening is where religion started serving mammon, because this is instead of working for a religion or... If you think about the system that was created and the design of the Constitution, everybody had a responsibility in their community to contribute, whether that was at the local level or working your way up to actually becoming the president of the United States. We had a responsibility, and it wasn't a profession that was there to actually become, you know, this is all you do. You still had a responsibility to sustain your own life. And this is where I see, even in today, those people who do the right things, they're right in their spirituality, where they receive blessings. Have you ever noticed that? Why are these guys doing so well? Well, Satan does the same thing. Those who are doing his bidding get their rewards. And those who do the Lord's work will be blessed. Getting into this, you will be blessed. Quit looking over your shoulder and wondering whether you should be doing this or not. Don't do this for, you know, getting your name in the annals of history. Do this because it's the right thing to do. Become a tool in his hands, and all of a sudden things change. So, and the last thing I want to do is lecture and, you know, preach and that type of thing. We're going to be going into a break. And when we come back, I want to close on this because I need to give you the analysis between the petition that I read and the Articles of Confederation so that you can kind of look at, you know, the bigger scale of what is in this document and so forth. So when we come back, we'll kind of close on the First Amendment petition as I kind of connect it to the Articles of Confederation and what you are going to find in the document. So we'll be right back after this short promo, and I'll revitalize my throat. I'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so I got to revitalize my throat every once in a while. I really try not to pause, you know, and create this dead silence while I have to take a drink. So it's very rare. But so that's one of the real reasons why I have a hard break is just for myself. And so eventually, if we get to a point where there are radio stations, just to put it out there, if there are radio stations that want to start airing the show, I am willing to add pauses for them to run their commercials. All it does is gives me a little bit more break time. I can give up my 1 minute here, a little bit there, a little bit there. I'm willing to do that. I'm not willing to do that to put money in my pocket. I do not make any money in doing this show. I'm not planning on making money in doing this show. I could make. I mean, look how much money Levin, Hannity, and all of these, I'll just say, has been conservative entertainers. I say there has been because they've been on the air so long. Rush Limbaugh, all of them. Anybody that has been on the air, and all the new people coming on the air are the future has-beens. They don't care about fixing the problem. If they fix the problem, then their money revenue goes away. They'd actually have to get a real job. And that's what I was talking about. The way the Constitution was written, we all have to still take care of our families. We have our personal obligations to take care of ourselves. Putting that burden upon the people so that we actually make, I mean, it's one thing that you actually serve your nation doing, you know, the defense of the nation or what have you. That's one thing. And you've got that retirement. But all these people going into public service to get a retirement, I have a problem with that. To keep people in public service, it's one thing to educate and help inform and those types of things. But a person retiring from civil service, being an employee, you better be taking care of your own retirement. Out of the money that you're getting in doing, being a burden to the taxpayers, even though it may be a necessary burden, but I'm telling you, the majority of the burden is not necessary. This has all been a part of the fleecing of America. So everybody, even our congressmen, every person that's been in politics, all the way down to the county, if you've done it long enough to where you make a retirement and you're a burden, you're a lifetime burden to the people, you're a parasite. It's just like the people, they're just as bad as the people in the legal industry, the medical industry. It's all self-serving. We need people that are actually making a sacrifice with what they're doing. Do not tell me that the people that don the uniform, I don't care what service they're in, even in the Army, even though the stuff that they're doing is unconstitutional, they shouldn't even be doing it, that's not their fault. But you can't tell me that these people are getting gold, you know, stacking and just loading up their pockets with gold by what they're doing. Absolutely not. It has been a progressive problem over time, even from the very beginning. They never got their fair due. They were always the lowest paid people in America. And many times, America turned their backs on them. Washington witnessed it. Washington actually saw an uprising of the military in his, I believe it was in his tenure, or it was before he became president, where he actually had to go in and calm these people that were so riled up, these former military men, because they weren't getting their promised pay. And they were ready to actually revolt against the governments. And Washington subdued that. And he, too, was in the same boat. He wasn't getting it. He just wasn't going to do the wrong thing. We have an obligation to take care of those who we've promised to cover. That's why I say Social Security does not, the people that have been obligated to Social Security should not suffer. We can, just like Milton Friedman laid it out, we can actualize this. But the reality is that all of these people that feel that what they're doing, they're do these things at your expense, they're parasites. They are parasites. And there's a huge difference between them and those of us, you know, who were given promises. You've heard me say this before. Where is my free dental and medical for life? That was the contract I joined the Marine Corps in, that I would have free dental and medical. And then all of a sudden, as they started creating Medicaid and Medicare, oh, well, we're going to force you into that. Now we even see today that the military still gets third rate or fourth rate care, but those who, you know, didn't put on a uniform, but they had to stand up and do the right thing for America by, you know, going into the two towers and so forth. Those first responders get treated like royalty compared to the guys that don the uniform and says, take me wherever you need me. And that's just absolutely immoral. It just infuriates me. I could make several shows going on and on about how these people who sign up in the military are absolutely at the will of the service. In other words, take me to where you need me to go. And I will do everything I can. I will die for this nation. There's a huge difference between that and these people that want this, you know, extra, put them in the VA with everybody else. There should never have been a second tier. Oh, we thank you for your service to America. How is that better than what the military has been doing? Are you kidding me? This infuriates me. Absolutely infuriates me. If we put everybody into the same system, then guess what? That VA is going to get fixed. Or I should say, it'll be properly moved underneath the DOD, and the DOD will finally do their job in taking care of those who they broke. Those who just either died, they got lame, what have you, in the name of duty, now they're going to fix the job. Because guess what? Because now they get held accountable, because that actually affects their budget, then they are going to start doing better in making sure that less people get broke, less people die. Right now, they just don't care. I have seen this. In my career, I saw a colonel stand up and actually say, hey, I am willing to throw my Marine Corps reconnaissance to their death. Just by deploying them into Iraq without the ability to get them back. That is the type of politics that I see in the military. And as much as I find that irreprehensible, it's just repugnant. What I see, everything else going on, and how, you know, that colonel was just trying to do his job to get a suck up for his next promotion. And he could actually have gotten away with that. But I believe that we need to start changing the mores of this nation. And the only way to do it, folks, is to teach people what our government is to do and how to hold them accountable. The supreme law of the land has been changed to where we have a right to be able to hold them accountable. It demands it. Section 3 of what everybody hates of the Constitution, the 14th Amendment. Why is that? Why has everybody been taught to hate the 14th Amendment when Section 3 is the foundation of what was missing in that Constitution? It was so critical to have this oath, to hold them accountable, but there was no teeth to it. The 14th Amendment was the teeth missing. They didn't think they needed to, but we're at a day tonight. We're at a time and point in time. I remember it's Packard, I think, Democratic senator of Oregon, or I believe it was. He was a Democratic senator from Oregon, got caught doing all sorts of things that were just absolutely wrong, and he refused to step down. We are at that point where people deflect, they obviate, they do everything they can. So let me dive into these obligatories, because running a campaign on holding people accountable and being willing to hold people accountable and yourself and signing pledges that you will hold yourself accountable, folks, that is the turn. That is the big shift that we need to take on, because that's what it's all about. Now, once you see this email and once you see what I've done, and if I get any type of feedback, good positive feedback, where I'm actually starting to get state legislators to go, you know what, this is absolutely amazing. I had no idea the Constitution guaranteed our suffrage. I want to keep you attuned, because we need you to encourage. So when you go to the Constitutional Articles page, I'm going to have this big segment of what I just sent out. I'll have the old archives, because I don't think I did anything in 2024. I don't think I did. I do know I did one or two in 2023. Because by 2024, the new election and getting everything, I just didn't have up-to-date email list. And I want to thank those people, a good patriot in Oklahoma, in Montana, those people who fed me. I can't name everybody. I can't. I'm praying that you don't need the recognition. You're just doing this because it's the right thing to do. Because there's no time for all of this to pat each other on the back. I mean, there are points in time when I pat myself on the back, but I actually, you know, I'm very forward with the fact that I think I just broke my elbow because I patted myself so hard on the back. I'm very humble in what I'm doing. I come across as an arrogant person, but an arrogant person doesn't do this for free. An arrogant person doesn't spend as much time and effort. And I only do this, folks, because the more I do this, the more I see his hand. Why would I want to keep you from seeing and understanding the divine wisdom in this system that our Lord and Creator, our Creator and His only begotten Son, what they gave us? So let me dive into what actually happened in this first petition that I read to you that is not aligned with that document that I've already put up out there. So if you go look at the document that I put, and I'll put this in a link so that you can kind of see all of this. If you look at, because this is the very first page, the very first page is all inclusive of this one petition, the very first petition. The real problem I have is they included this petition, but they did not include the Articles of Association. Now, here's one little thing that they mention as this little side note. And so when you look at this document, this PDF file that I am kind of excoriating, because why did they leave out the Articles of Association? What they do say here is the delegates agreed that this is a little comment. It's not even highlighted, but it's at the very bottom right side underneath a picture of those men that signed this petition. And it says this: the delegates agreed that if the offending acts of Parliament were not repealed, the colonies would boycott British goods after December 1st, and they would meet in a Second Continental Congress the following May. Now, actually, they didn't meet in a second following Congress, because they kept on meeting, And I know this because they were sending out Tory acts. And if you look at the Tory acts that I have on the website, on the academic source document page, you'll actually see every time Continental Congress sent out a note to the Tories, or actually not to the Tories, to the provincial governments. What I mean by the provincial governments, because the state governments were disbanded. So the provincial governments were the committees of safety, the councils, the conventions, the assemblies. Every state and every group called themselves something different. And so Continental Congress tried to be inclusive in identifying to you assemblies, committees, conventions, and so forth. So that's why you'll see that in the Tory Acts. So you'll see that they actually sent out, and in March of 1776, we went through this on the Tory Acts. In March is when they basically made a data call out, because by this point in time, Continental Congress was so frustrated. They said, you know what, we need to actually move towards a Declaration of Independence. So let's find out what the king and what Parliament has done in responding for the petitions of redress. Now, technically, I don't think they've sent hardly anything to Parliament at all, other than where do you get the authority to do this? Probably. Why? Because there was nobody in Parliament that represented the people in the colonies. These were representatives of, you know, the muckety-mucks in, or I should say, the aristocracy and the muckety-mucks, the common people in Britain, or in the, yeah, in Britain, because it wasn't the UK. I was going to say the UK. So when you look at the Articles of Association, this is where they actually say, you know, they call out slavery. We actually read this. Tammy and I read this. So go listen to that podcast where we read the Articles of Association so you can compare this petition to that. And so you can kind of see what was being said to the king and what was said in the Articles of Association, because the Articles of Association and this petition were promulgated at the same time. Huh. That's why that says the delegates agreed and sent out something else that basically said they were going to boycott. Well, that happened to be an actual governing document. And what I mean by a governing document, as the colonists actually sent representatives into Continental Congress, they came up with an agreement of what they were going to do together as a union in this, not even a formed confederation yet. They didn't become a confederation until 1787, or not 1777. So it took 2 years for them to finally get the Articles of Confederation. So they were functioning over and under this agreement, under the auspices of the Articles of Association. And the Articles of Confederation were very clear that they weren't going to be going, you know, they weren't going to become abolitionists. They, you know, the slavery thing got tucked under the rug at that point. And they had to do that because the Declaration of Independence had to get sanitized too. That's why every year I read the full draft of what Thomas Jefferson sent out, how he was calling out England for mandating and pushing slavery down our throats and the immorality of what the king had been doing in taking people. As a matter of fact, we covered this in the Constitutional Convention, either just last week or the week before, you know, how just wrong it was that they were taking people, ripping them out of the homes of their families, and how it was so immoral. And as a matter of fact, I don't believe that was George Mason. That was somebody else that said that. And I pointed out that I think that was one of the things that just helped build up George Mason's, you know, frustrations in the Continental Congress or in the Constitutional Convention. I'm talking too fast. Forgive me. That's what built up his frustrations during the Constitutional Convention to where he finally exploded in August 22nd when the delegates of that convention decided that they would allow. There were a few people that were infuriated, and Mason spoke out. And that's when he basically scorned and said, this nation will be punished by the hand of our Creator, because he cannot dole out justice and punishment in heaven for states and nations. And so this nation and these states would receive his ire and punishment. So I'm just pointing out the problems that I have with this petition, what they're presenting. More importantly, as I post this petition on the academic source documents page, and it's going to be down in the bottom because as the documents, I cover them in order, will be as such. So you're going to need to look for the document that says the first petition of the Grand American Continental Congress, October 1774. And when you open this document up, you're going to notice that I have the green, and the green is because I just skipped over this when I read this. It is basically the mentioning of all 13 colonies. Then it goes through the petition, the text of the petition. As you go through this, don't worry about the misspelled words. That is the academic accuracy, because you never change. If you change a misspelled word, by the way, in academic standards, if you change an old document, you're citing something and a word is misspelled and you change that, you have violated the standards of academia. You have to actually keep everything as it was written. If you've got a source document and that's how it was spelt, then you leave it by the hand of the author. You do not change anything. So anyway, go through this document and you're going to find 1, 2, 3 paragraphs. Three paragraphs. This is a lot of wording, but you're going to find that these three paragraphs are missing from the document that is being cycled around or circled around by these people who are promoting. And I don't know why. Why did they cut out those pages? Or I should say, because it's a good page. Why did they cut out those paragraphs? Because they weren't important? To me, when you're talking about academic standards, it's one thing to change a word, but to take out everything. Because when you're saying, here's the petition, but it doesn't have three whole paragraphs, then to me, the whoever put it together should be scrutinized because they're violating academic standards. If you say that that is the document and you cut out three paragraphs, then that person is cutting things out. Why is it? Now we have to create a suspicion of why they are hiding these things. That becomes problematic, okay? So where are we? We've got these things up and we're done with this because I basically lay this out that, and I look at what they said here. I don't see anything at this point in time because the Constitution has not, the Articles of Confederation haven't been created yet. So what's the importance of this document other than the fact that it exposes how with this, with the Tory Acts, with these other documents that I give you, you can actually start connecting the dots of how they were functioning. This is why we need to get our representatives, just to be clear, we're not a monarchical theocracy anymore. We're a Republican form of government. At the county level, you actually have representatives, whether you like it or not, you are electing them. Whether you like the election system or not, the people that are voting are basically putting these people in office. We have to take this back. And when you have to actually start creating a movement in your county, if you don't create the movement, if you don't wake up the people, then you're a part of the problem. We have to start educating. If you want to work behind the scenes and do this, then all you're doing is, there's a word for it, marionette or what have you, the person that's actually behind the stage pulling the strings on the puppets, right? You don't be a marionette. We need to educate and get the people invigorated. I believe that if you get 5 to 10% of the people understanding what the heck's going on, you will be successful in getting that county to change its direction, because that's a big sampling, because those people talk to other people. And even though they may not get directly engaged, they're listening to these people. This was what changed. This is how America didn't actually have an equal uprising against the uprising during the Revolutionary War. And we're talking 3 to 7%. I mean, that's the estimates. 3 to 7% of the people in the colonies were standing up and saying, we got to do something about this. And there were enough people leaving their fields and leaving their families, being completely uneducated and taking up arms to fight a revolution. Even though it was still a small body in comparison to all the millions of people that lived in the colonies at the time. Very small. That's what it takes. And folks, don't think you need to feel like you've got a majority of the county. You will be surprised when people realize that they're to be held accountable, when they understand the real law. Only an evil person would say, oh, you know what? I want these people to violate the law. Those people will actually, as they start standing up and they start promoting it, this becomes reprehensible. I mean, everybody in your county is going to realize that these people probably shouldn't even be living here. They are absolutely supporting an insurrection against the Constitution. That's the one thing that keeps us safe. That is the one thing that protects your religious freedom. It protects everything because it doesn't delegate to government any of these things to be able to oppress us. They're only capable of doing these things delegated. So getting government into compliance, even though we may like a few things, I think most people, rational people, reasonable people, equally informed, will realize I'm better off in not having the teeth, because as we see the perversion of our medical industry and death panels coming out, I mean, I'm already seeing that when you're looking at organ transplants and so forth, the age of persons being able to receive an organ transplant is dropping. In other words, you know, they're valuing your life. If you're in your 60s, I think it's 50-something in many of the states. Go look it up. That number is dropping. Who would be eligible? Because the younger people and the lack of the mores, because us as parents, too many people that are our age did a bad job in parenting because we didn't think it was important to teach our children about liberty and civics and these types of things. And it only got worse over time. I'm not trying to point blame. We all share the blame. As a matter of fact, that other document that I mentioned to you, you know, who has really failed America? When you read that, it's going to be us and our public servants, our representatives. Because in that, I point out that we have a judiciary form of government. We have an executive form of government. We have a party form of government. We do not have a Republican form of government. Because if we had a Republican form of government, then our Congress, our state legislature, and our local legislators would be able to reel in these judges, would be able to reel in these executives, because they have the sovereignty and authority to do so. Go read the Constitution. The Constitution has Congress holding that president accountable. Congress has the ability to actually regulate the courts. The focus of power was really concentrated in our Republican form of government. The right of petition is to petition our representatives, not the court, not the executive. We don't petition the king. We have no king. He's an executive that only faithfully executes the job. Our courts basically look at a case and determine the case based on law and fact. They don't have the ability to create agendas and push rulings and ideas and laws down our throat. The Constitution would have been rejected had they actually said that this is what's going to happen. Because the Constitution would allow this. The Constitution never allowed this stuff, folks. And that's why when we go through the ratification debates, I'm going to constantly be telling you that, oh, well, the federals say that they're going to, anti-federals say they're going to do this, and they did this, doesn't mean it was constitutional. It basically means that they violated the Constitution. And we'll point this out to you. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.